special editions of Potterfic Weekly make me happy, and this one makes me extremely so. For August 15th, 2007, the special edition of Potterfic Weekly. Welcome to the place where the episode never ends.
Hey Ron, the next time you're freaked at me for calling me on the Quidditch pitch, just remember that time that you stole my chocolate cauldron and declared your love for Romilda Bane.
Right. This is our fourth and final special edition of Potterfic Weekly for a while. We've kind of gone off the deep end, which is kind of new for us. Well, not really. We do it every week. But we've had episodes on Order of the Phoenix, the movie, which I still haven't seen yet. That movie came out, like, what, like a month ago?
Almost.
Yeah.
Do I have to come kidnap you?
You're the closest one. Actually, who's closer, Melinda or Tina? Probably Tina. Okay. So we've done episodes on Order of the Phoenix. We've done an episode that was 4 hours and 10 minutes long, I just want to point out, on Deathly Hallows. We did an introduction to fan fiction, and now we're going to talk about something that I've been meaning to talk about you guys with since, I think, when did we start the podcast? January. On the end of canon and how it will affect fan fiction. And another angle I want to take at it tonight in our conversation is, how do you think fan fiction affected the end of canon? For those of us who have been reading fan fiction for a while, or especially those of us who just read the Seventh Horcrux, how did being a part of this fandom, do you guys think, affect your enjoyment of the last book? Was it something where you saw certain things coming before they happened because you've read them in fan fiction, or were you very surprised because it was nothing like fan fiction? So we're going to get into that tonight. Jen, do you have any forum news?
Forum news. Oh, okay. I'm going to do this on the podcast. We've had the t-shirt contest, everyone, mm-hmm. right? And the problem is that we are now looking for more of a PFW logo that we can actually put on a shirt and make, because we can't use anything that could possibly, potentially be copyrighted in any way. So I want to, I know that the t-shirt contest has been up for a while on the forums, but I want to encourage everyone to make a PFW logo, something that we can actually use so that we can get t-shirts made and have, you know, real participation for the people who want a shirt.
Rob, does Spellcast have t-shirts?
Yes, we do. In fact, we have a Spellcast thong.
What?
It's true. I bought one. No.
What? I love the moment of silence. Jen's like, they come in all these nifty colors.
No, it's actually just white with the Spellcast logo in black. We have t-shirts. We got two different types. A black with the full normal logo, and then like a white t-shirt with a black logo. But we're lucky because we don't have Potter in our name. We can't get sued.
But we have PFW, so we're like poof. So we
make sure you don't have too many Potter references, otherwise your good friends Ryan and Jen are going to get sued.
Yeah,
and that's we found out that anything that says HP, Harry Potter, Potter, Voldemort, like anything that has any of those things, we can't use any of them.
You didn't think that Voldemort was copyright protected?
Well, I didn't think about it at all. I mean, that was the responses we got, and they were lovely. I want to thank everyone who did take the time to make a shirt. We just can't use any of them yet, and that's why I've been putting off doing the awards for them, because we can't actually use any of those.
Jen?
What?
Is it possible that you put it on the back burner for a while, then came back and used the excuse?
I was hoping you wouldn't call
me. You didn't want to get sued. I realized months ago you were going to get sued, and I haven't known how to tell you, so I've been putting it off every week.
You better edit that part out, buddy.
I'm sure. Yeah. That
if you want to give me a second, I can get you a link to a website that essentially allows you to upload your own pictures and make your own t-shirts.
Yes.
So for those people who really love the logos, the things they made for you, they can actually just do it themselves.
Sure.
Okay.
Just give me a second.
Other forum news, while he's doing that, I think somebody should mention the Quibbler.
Oh, God. Yeah, and just to jump in.
How doesn't Melinda do that? I mean, she's a writer, right? Did you do it? Did you write for it?
I didn't write for it, no.
Where did I get that?
Melinda, Melinda didn't really read it, is the problem that we had.
Oh, is that it? I heard something about Melinda and the Quibbler, and I assumed.
That was me gulping in panic when you're telling me to go for that.
Oh, no, no.
All right, I'll take care of that. Okay.
I'm sorry.
And we haven't pimped out the... Oh, God, I just said pimped out. Okay, we haven't...
You are so...
I am so New England. And we haven't... And we haven't talked about the Parific Weekly forums in a while. They're very addictive, you know, much like, you know, Snorak Dung, for example. And I bring up Snorak Dung to draw your attention to parificforum.com, where Lady Chi has begun publishing the Quibbler week to week. And I just want to share with you some of the headlines from the first edition of the Quibbler. In the first edition, we had the headline "Gryffindors Seize Power," because apparently, when I was in the men's room, Gryffindors took over our forum. The Gossip Corner: Scandal in the Prefect's Lounge. I can't even get into that one because we'd probably get pulled from iTunes. And I don't even know how to say this, so I'm just going to say it. Snorak Dung, instrumental in Spellcast's decision to employ Ryan as senior host. Rob, is there anything you want to just get out of the way before we start the podcast tonight? Is there anything you want to share with our listeners tonight?
No, not really.
Okay. Rob does not have a problem inhaling dried Snorak Dung. I apologize on behalf of Perfect Weekly to Rob's family and friends, you know, for...
Oh, it's quite all right.
You're all right with that, all right.
I actually do have something for you, though.
What do you have for us, Rob?
For those of you who actually took the time and did something for the t-shirt contest, but you'll love your design so much, and you just can't part with it, and even though you're like, I really want them to get sued just so I can have my t-shirt, and they're not going to do it anyway, there's another way for you to get a t-shirt with your design. There's a website called Vistaprint.com. Essentially, it allows you to upload your own design for a very small fee, and then it allows you to have them make you a t-shirt, and they mail it to you, and you get to wear it. And you get
it's
to be
very,
a huge...
very inexpensive. That's the company we use for our business postcards and stuff.
Right. And we had to, yeah, exactly. That's what Spellcast uses for all of its swag and whatnot. But it's a great website. And so for those of you who want to make your own Potterfic Weekly t-shirts, kind of black market underneath the table.
We can't say that on
air.
Oh,
I can. I can. But
Robert's a very powerful person who's actually, you know, probably wearing a Spellcast thong right now. So I just really...
Okay, that
actually,
went.
I have to say that
story for the Quibbler that includes that. No.
I have never worn a Spellcast thong. I've never worn a thong in general. But
thank you, yeah, Robert, for naming tonight's episode. That was helpful.
Oh,
when
crap.
He told me they had Spellcast thongs, I thought that he was talking about flip flops, and I was like, oh, I want one, and like because that would be really cool. Like I own Superman flip flops, and so and he was like, oh. Hmm. I was like, why are you so uncomfortable? I don't understand.
This is moments after Jen said, you have a sexy voice. Will you just read me anything for as long as you can?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
enough of my podcast. Let's work on your podcast.
All right, so just, again, anyone listening to this who hasn't joined the Parific Weekly forums, it's like listening to Parific Weekly, the podcast, all the time. Every few minutes, Jen's coming up with something that you never thought you'd hear another human being say. Last night, you know, Tina was on there, kind of drunk a little bit. It's a hilarious place. You're going to love the Parific
Just a little bit.
All right.
Tina, you sounded like you were having such a good time. I was so jealous.
Well... I hope I didn't thoroughly embarrass myself, but...
You did, but it was very
good night.
I was on Vicodin for, like, 2 episodes. Nobody gets to compare.
Tina was using the spell check continuously last evening, and for that we are all grateful.
And hey, at least I knew I should be using the spell check.
That's true. That's true. You know, give your friend the keys and always use the spell checker. Moving into the discussion portion of tonight's podcast, the topic tonight, as we close out, you know, our Deathly Hallows discussion and get back into fan fiction, is how has the release of Deathly Hallows and the end of canon affected fan fiction? So far, you know, there's many different explanations for why people write fan fiction, and, you know, is it something that just passes time until the next book comes out? Is it something that people want to try and guess what's going to happen next and see how right they are? Is it something where people want to try something that they know won't be in the canon? So there's a lot of different reasons why people write it. How is that going to change now that the canon's out? And just as a guy who, you know, has his own podcast, which is, you know, very into fan fiction, how do you think that... Let me even back up. And since we're all very involved in the fandom, I'm curious how reading Deathly Hallows was... I'm curious how our involvement in the fandom has affected, you know, our reading of Deathly Hallows versus some guy who's never read fan fiction and just, you know, read each of the books once and then grabbed the last one. I'm just kind of curious about that. Rob, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference to it. I mean, I guess you can kind of get on to the whole entire situation, whether how the epilogue of Doom kind of plays into everything. But I think it's all... I don't think it's really stopped the amount of fan fiction that's been coming out of the fandom, at least from what I've kind of been getting at, from what I've seen. A lot of fan fiction, like there's a lot of missing scene fan fiction that gets written, I think, a lot around books, because it's like, oh, I loved this part, but I'm really curious as to what would have happened here or what would have happened there. Like, I have a friend who's writing a piece on what happened when Ginny, Neville, and Luna go and try to get Gryffindor's sword from Snape. Can't talk, sorry. So I definitely think we'll be seeing a lot of missing scene fic in the months to come, and I think we'll kind of be seeing a lot of stuff that really kind of fits in between the end of Deathly Hallows and 19 years later in the epilogue. Kind of like we'll be seeing a lot of stuff about James and Lily Potter, James, Albus, and Lily Potter, the young ones, not Harry's parents, obviously.
Yeah.
And then just stuff like that.
Melinda, Richard, I know you guys are looking for plot bunnies to start writing about some of this. How is, Melinda, why don't you start then, maybe Richard, how has Deathly Hallows impacted fan fiction for you guys?
I haven't really read a lot of the post DH stuff yet. I'm not quite ready, I think, to look into it yet, but I don't, before the book came out, I was worried of what was going to happen to fan fiction, but now that it's been here, I think that there's still plenty of room. I think she's wide open with that 19-year span there to fill in a lot of the blanks. And I know I've heard a lot of people say about the epilogue being cliche, but I think that that might only be true for those of us who do read the fan fiction. I think for the people that don't read it, it might only be that way because we've seen, you know, a lot of that stuff before through fan fiction. But for people that don't follow it as obsessively as those of us on the fandom do, I don't think the cliche will be there. Oh God, I couldn't get those words out at all.
No problem. Yeah, and that's actually something I want to get into in tonight's episode, is that, you know, that's actually interesting you said that. One thing I've heard is, you know, I feel like I've read this five times because, you know, so many fan fictions have struck similar chords, but for, you know, Joe Blow in the street who hasn't read fan fiction, that was the first time they really got that look at the future. So just, you know, you know, just so that's just interesting how it affects us differently than them. Richard, how about you?
Personally, I feel it's a curse and a blessing. Me, when I write, I really hate, if I can, to go against canon as it is. And to close the door on a lot of things, you know, particularly ship-wise and a lot of other things that really can't be done unless you're willing to go into the AU realm. But Rob said, there's a lot of missing moments that can be put in, especially with 19 years. And, you know, a lot of things that aren't talked about, like Teddy and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's... depending on how you look at it, I mean, it's both, really, depending on, you know, your writing style for writers. And I think there's still going to be a ton of stuff for people to read, so there's not going to be anything lacking.
Like, what ships do you think she closed the door on that you would have liked to have written?
Well...
Full immunity.
Okay, well, Melinda knows well where I stand, but I think I'm the last Harmonian around.
Rob?
No, actually, I used to be a Harmonian, hardcore, but I've kind of gone to be more like a Switzerland in the middle. But I agree with you. I definitely think that Harry Hermione is kind of doors closed. But then again, I mean, there's really so much you can do with AU. It just depends on how canon compliant you really want to be. So
it's kind of funny. I was talking. I can't remember who it was on the forum, but I think it might have been Vane, but. I was telling how adamant I actually was for Harmony. I was going to, had it in my mind that I was going to write a post 19 year fic that there was some kind of breakup, but you know, I couldn't convince myself to actually go that far and to be that crazy with it. But I mean, I'm sure some people would read it, but too many people would hate me afterwards.
Well, you don't have to have the breakup. I mean, Rob could, sorry, Rob, you know, Ron could just, you know, slip getting off platform 9 3/4 and fall in front of the train.
What about Jenny?
Oh my gosh.
That's a very good point. Jenny could go to save
him. They both
him.
Fall off and hit the drain.
He could grab her for support, forgetting she weighs 100 pounds, and pull her over.
Well, supposedly Jenny was like, what, a Quidditch player for years, and so she could, you know, fall off the broom and
there's no squick factor there with the fact that all these nieces and nephews have been calling Uncle Harry and Auntie Hermione all these years, and all of a sudden Auntie Hermione and Daddy are
Daddy.
I don't know. It's too pretty of a picture.
Curly hair for some reason.
But hasn't Ron dying been like a very common theme in a lot of Harry Hermione fic?
Well, see,
even long
dies,
before Deathly Hallows
came
out.
Yeah, it's either he dies or he's a traitor.
You gotta get rid of him. Yeah,
it's either you make him an ass or you get rid of him. And personally, I don't think either do justice to Ron's character. And
get rid of him and bring him back, and then it's okay.
Well, yeah. See, if only there's a fic out there that did that.
I know. You think?
Yeah.
Dot.
Not to get into a Ron debate, but personally, I kind of hate his character, and so I mean that wouldn't be too far of a stretch for me.
Yes.
To write that.
Well, said yes. I said boo hiss.
Oh, I was like, oh, that's a little strong.
Well, Rich, I just have to ask you, reading Deathly Hallows, when Ron abandons Harry and Hermione, and Harry and Hermione essentially, like, you know, go off and see the world for a few weeks, you know, by themselves, like, what were you thinking?
That added to my hatred of his. I mean, I already didn't like that he was the only one that's really abandoned Harry, like, during important times.
I couldn't believe that! Ugh!
Yeah,
and I wasn't this upset when the grizzly bear attacked her. Jesus.
What Ryan is asking is, did you think that that was a possible hint for Harry Hermione? I know I've heard people say that they were excited at that point, but I can't understand how, because she was crying over Ron and he was staring at Ginny's dot. So it's
there was a lot. I honestly felt there was a lot of Harry Hermione potential in this book until the end.
Delicious, Harry.
If you notice, they hold hands through the entire book, practically. And when they're the only two left, you know, and when people are thrown together in certain circumstances, things happen.
Jen, have you ever read a trashy romance novel?
What's that? What? What are you talking about? What are you referring to?
Absolutely nothing at all. Yeah, guys, just jump in this conversation. Tina, what about you?
As a reader of fan fiction, I guess right now I'm not ready for it yet. I still need some time to decompress.
Yeah.
But I've read a couple one shots, you know, missing moment type things, or you know, and that's enough for now. But I'm sure in a couple weeks I'll be looking. You know, I'll probably read, you know, the one shots that are out there and things like that, and then maybe a few months down the line, I'll be ready to jump into something that's more substantial.
Yeah, I mean, this is I guess my question, I'll throw this out here, because maybe this is my personal preference. Maybe I'm kind of an oddball in the fandom. I'm someone who really likes to get involved in a particular storyline, in the particular universe of an author. So when I first got into the fandom, I primarily looked for, you know, 6th year and 7th year sequel fix. So there's a lot of stuff to read. Like, I looked at Melinda's stuff. I looked at Switch and Flick stuff. You know, I looked, you know, After the End, very long involved stories. You know, we're doing A Year Like None Other starting, you know, later this week, next week. You know, very, you know, like, I'm not really a one-shot guy, although I do read them. I really want to get invested in it. And I guess my question is, you know, based on when I got into the fandom, it's a lot of, you know, 5th year, 6th year stuff when the author has time to complete, you know, the original 7-year story of Hogwarts and has time to really get in there like many of you have done and you tell how you think the story should end. And now that we have 7 years of canon, do you see the future of fan fiction being primarily based out of, like Rob said, like the missing moments or, you know, in that 19-year gap or, you know, post 19 years? Do you see it in any way kind of backing up and saying, well, what if this happened? What if this happened? Which you probably would have seen maybe if Harry died or if, you know, it was more tragic than it was. Like, do you basically see that as the future of the fandom, or do you see it, you know, being very free ranging and people, you know, feeling free to go back and tell their own Deathly Hallows again? And go ahead, Jen.
Well, it's hard for me because I like both canon-esque fics and AU fics. You know, and I think a lot of stories that will come out, maybe pretend that the epilogue didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that when I was reading it, you know, and I'm not trying to be negative, I kind of saw the epilogue as kind of fanfiction-esque, like, you know, because to me, the story ended in the last chapter before that. And I just felt like that was one way it could end. But I think a lot of fics will come out and be a different ending or pick up the next day or and go after that. But I'm particularly I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of AU fics too, though, because I think there are going to be a lot of people who were really connected to the Harry Hermione or the Remus Tonks or the Fred getting somebody or, you know, all these other ships that obviously don't have a life. And I think there are certain things like Hedwig dying. Like, I'm not sure that they will write Hedwig dead. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can see a lot of stories where they write AU fix, not necessarily what might have happened, but just a different story, allowing the characters that they didn't want to lose, let them live on somehow.
I think that it'll go in two ways. I think the AU is definitely going to have a big takeoff, that they're going to change things, go with different ships that way. And then the canon-esque is going to completely fill in that 19 years. I think there's still a lot of room for story in there, but there's a lot of people that will go, you know, with either or, but then there's other people that strictly like the AU, and then people like me who I just have no patience for it. I want the canon.
Right.
But there's a lot in that 19 years still to, like, Harry becomes an Auror, but he's got that Elder Wand, so he's got to be really careful about letting himself get defeated by anything. He can't lose the power from that wand, right? So I think there's a whole lot of story to be written right there.
Well, didn't he give the Elder Wand? Actually, that's a really good question.
Harry put it away.
It's buried,
yeah,
with Dumbledore,
it,
right?
Dumbledore. But
he's still the master.
He's the master of it, right?
So if he loses his own wand.
So if he's an Auror, he's still got to be really careful with all these other, whoever he's going to be going after, because he can't be defeated
or
lose control of that wand.
I can actually see a lot more Draco being written as well. You know, maybe a lot of people, and that would be canon-esque to write about maybe his side of the story from day one and, you know, kind of his life and how he has reformed. Or has he? I mean, is he just a sneaky little bastard who pretends to be on the side of the winning? I mean, seriously, there's a lot to be said with his storyline, I feel. And even though Snape is dead, even though Snape is dead, I feel that he has a lot of story to still tell.
I see. I would like to see, and I'm sure this will be done, is a lot of retelling of Deathly Hallows from other points of view, say Ginny or Neville or Snape. I think, Richard, maybe this is something for you, but, you know, retelling of the year from Snape's point of view and what his motivations were and really, you know, get into that. And I would be interested in reading some of those. And I think there'll be a lot of those.
Yeah.
I think what I've seen a lot of so far in the one-shots is, you know, the immediate after. And that's definitely something that I'd like to see explored in a longer fic, because I've said before, my favorite part of any scene is the aftermath. Even more than the battle, I like to read the aftermath. But you could write a whole summer story just on the aftermath. You know, there's so many people affected that we didn't touch on at all. So I think there's a lot to explore there.
Do you have any ideas? Hint.
That was it, yeah.
Oh, no, I meant for you. What, are you going to do it?
It's the aftermath. I'm thinking, I don't know. I don't know what.
Because that would be wonderful.
That would be back to the character-driven, you know, with George, with Percy, with Harry, with Teddy.
Because there was so much unfinished business. Like, we never get to see how George react. I mean, we see him.
Do we see George after Fred dies? I can't recall.
Only momentarily.
Briefly.
Okay. Yeah, just in passing.
Okay. Was he by Fred's body? I remember Molly crying.
Yeah, he was like over his head, leaning over his head.
Okay.
Wasn't he?
Oh my God, someone other than Jen crying during a podcast. I don't know what to do. Yeah, I mean, well, Teddy seems to be kind of like the nexus of where.
Yeah, everybody's focusing a lot on Teddy, but I think there's a lot, like, my interest lies more with Harry's reaction to Teddy. I think he would be very focused on trying to make Teddy's life different than what
I don't really care about the next generation stories.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think
there's a lot of people that do. It just doesn't work.
That doesn't do it for
me.
Well,
I care how the next generation impacts the current generation. How is the fact that there's this baby around here without parents impact, you know, Harry and Ginny and, you know, even, you know, Tonks's mother? Yeah, I'm really interested to see how George copes without having his brother, because I said this before, I know a lot of people, when they read the twins, they see the different characteristics and they see Fred being, you know, the very, you know, outgoing twin, and George is a little bit more reserved, a little bit more intellectual. And I really don't see that. I see them as almost being, you know, interchangeable to an extent. So I think that'd be really interesting to see how George deals with not being, you know, one of two, how he deals with being his own person. Because I think a lot of times people just lump him into that group of, their, you know, there's at least another one around, and they're two very different people. So I'd be interested in seeing that. Does anyone think that we will see a great number of fics who, I guess here's my thing. I think a lot of people, and I'm reading over the notes on our forum now, people posted about this, and I know, Melinda, we talked about it before, too. People said if they weren't happy with Deathly Hallows, they'd find a way to fix it. And they, you know, if Harry dies, we'll find a way to bring him back. If Ginny dies, we'll find a way to bring her back. Everyone seems pretty, you know, satisfied with Deathly Hallows. You know, we lost people, but we didn't lose anybody that, you know, people couldn't live without. Does that seem fair? Or?
Yeah, it does seem fair. I mean, I would have preferred if Fred hadn't died, but the fact that he did it's a war. I can accept that in a way that I couldn't have accepted Harry dying.
How did we talked about this before. How did your son deal with, did he finally read Fred dying?
He didn't read it yet. He hasn't reached that part, but I ended up telling him because I was just stressing about it too much, and he wasn't thrilled. No, because he keeps going on, no spoilers, don't give me spoilers. And I keep trying to tell him, Connor, there are characters you like that are going to die. You know, you got to remember they're only characters, but there's things you're not going to like. And he kept assuming I was talking about Hagrid, and he kept going on, I know Hagrid. And he was so braced for Hagrid. And I was like, Connor, I'm not going to tell you what happens to Hagrid, but Hagrid's not who I'm talking about. And I could just see, like, the color drain out of his face. He goes, it's not Fred or George, is it? And I was like,
how old is he?
He's 10.
Oh.
So I was like, well, if it was, would you want me to tell you? And he says, only if it's Fred or George. And I was like, yeah, it was. And I can just see him cringing. And I was like, so my good buddy here, Richard, who is writing a Fred fic now, has agreed to have George's son. I hope it's okay that I say this, Richard.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. It has agreed. It was Ryan's idea, actually, which I loved, and it made Connor feel so much better, that George's son, Fred, is going to have the middle name Connor. So I was very happy with that, and Connor was very pleased with that, actually. That perked him right back up again when I told him that. So.
It feels so good that I'm helping the kids. That feels good.
Well, that was it was hard to read it, but it was worse knowing. It's like, oh, God, how's he going to take this? So that was tough.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, we've been talking about this for a while, this concept, and it seems like it worked out a lot better than I anticipated. I was really afraid that we were going to have a very, very traumatizing loss that would affect, you know, most of the fandom. You know, mainly one of the big three, or, you know, or Neville, or Ginny, or Luna, someone in that you know, far inner circle. But you really didn't see that. So I think a lot of people were satisfied with where Deathly Hallows left off, and then...
Well, I think Snape was a pretty big death to a lot of people. It's just, I think a lot of people expected it to come, though.
Yeah. And yeah. I think a lot of people, do you all get the sense that a lot, like Melinda, I know you wrote about him being a bad guy before, but I think a lot of people were prepared for him turning out to be good. And I think there was a smaller percentage who were prepared, you know, for him to have been in love with Lily the whole time. But that that really brings me into, you know, into what I really want to talk about here. We've all been in the fandom for years. I think I'm not sure who's been here the longest, but we've all been doing this for a long time. How do you think that impacted reading Deathly Hallows? How does the fact that we read, you know, hundreds of fan fictions and write them and are so invested in these characters, do you think that took away at all from Deathly Hallows? Do you think it really, like, I'm curious what everyone thinks about that.
Well, I have to say that I didn't expect this to happen, but when I read it, having read Melinda's fic right before, I noticed that I could not get as immersed into the story as canon as what it was, because it all felt so familiar. Does that? And I'm not trying to be like weird or anything, but it was hard for me to. I kept being pulled out of the story because I kept having to go, well, huh? I knew that somehow, or
yeah.
Does that make sense? And so it didn't feel like this completely new, unexpected thing like the others had, because I felt in some ways that I'd already read it, a parts of it. Does that make sense?
It does. In the most complimentary way. I remember thinking when I was first, in my first read, thinking, this almost reads like a fanfic. And I don't know why I had that in the back of my head, but that's what I was thinking as I was reading it. And
yeah,
again,
very much
I mean
so.
That totally complimentary. You know, it just, I guess because of all the fanfics I had read of, you know, seventh year Horcrux hunts and whatnot, and they were always, you know, so action packed, and they're on the run, and they're doing this, and they're going here, and that I didn't expect that from the canon. And then when we got that, I was like,
like, you almost thought she had, like, the duty to top everybody, you know, and have the one idea that nobody thought of and have that be.
In some ways, it felt like she'd stolen from numerous fanfics that I've read. No, it was just, I'm sure that she didn't, you know, it seemed like something I'd read before once upon a time.
See, I had a different reaction to it.
It seemed like something I wrote before once upon a time.
She's there giggling.
I had a reaction that it was much more polished than anything that I'd read in fan fiction. And when I saw things that other people, like, I know Ash has The Year of the One, where she starts out with Polyjuiced Harry. I think she has three of them. But I remember, like, go Ash, as I was reading it. So I was kind of excited for similarities that I saw.
Did anybody think this?
I got that, but the fan fiction, the book in general, I just thought had a much more polished feel to it.
Yeah.
I kept imagining, and I don't, maybe it was just because the movie had come out 2 weeks before, but I kept, like, trying to imagine seeing this book on film. And I kept thinking, wow, like, half the movie we're not actually going to see our characters because they're polyjuiced all the time.
Yeah.
Evidently, nobody.
No, I'm trying to think of. I mean, here's the thing. I've been hinting at this. I'm not a big fan of the movies because, you know, for the reason, you know, every time I read this, if I try and think about the movies as I'm reading it, all I can think is, well, they're going to cut this scene. They're not possibly going to put this scene in there. They're going to cut this character because this character isn't desperately needed, you know, for the hour and a half movie they're probably going to put out.
But you're very negative about the movies.
Well, just
like
the movies.
The movies.
I'm very positive otherwise. I'm glass half full. I dance down the streets. I kiss children on the forehead.
Aww.
And help grandma across, you know, pack her groceries in her car. I'm a very nice person. I just don't like the movies. But, I mean, that's my reaction when I read this. I think to myself, okay, they're going to have this and that and this and that. And God knows.
What did anyone else think? I mean, am I so off?
No.
Did anybody else imagine the Harry Hermione holding hands? Like, did anybody else notice how physical this book was? Like, somebody's always touching someone else, and it just really stood out in my mind. Or maybe I just look for that kind of.
I think you definitely look for that, but I think it's a fair criticism. I mean, I think they're going to have to in the movie. You know, they're going to be wearing, you know, like capes and, you know, hoods all the time because they're paying these guys millions of dollars. They're going to use them in every scene they can.
Yeah.
But.
Well, like, especially that scene between Ron and Harry where Harry has to tell Ron, you know, I haven't liked, you know, she's like a sister. Like, I can't wait to see that scene.
Jen, I know what you're saying. I did have, as I was reading it, I had in the back of my head, like, how the heck are they going to do this in the movie? I have to admit. And there are things I am looking forward to seeing, but with the expectation most of them will probably be cut.
I can't say that I feel as negatively, because although there's a lot cut in this last movie, I felt that they tried hardest, and all the scenes that I cared about were actually there.
Really liked this last movie. I didn't really even think of the movie as I was reading the book, but I don't think I get quite as upset about the movies as Ryan or some of the other
people. Yeah,
I'm sitting here like going, bad movies, bad.
I don't look at them as really the canon. It's almost as if I'm reading a fan fiction again based on the movie, which is like, you know, some of the fun stuff, it's fun to see, but it's not the same thing. It's just somebody's depiction of it.
Yeah.
Well, I know I kept thinking, wow, Michael Gambon actually had it right. What? Did anybody else?
Jen, I never want to hear you say that again.
It's true.
I agree.
Okay, I'll be quiet. What did Richard? Please go. I'm sorry for interrupting.
It's no problem. Well, I don't want to harp on Gambon, but
Richard, go for it, please.
Well, I've already said it pretty harshly that, I mean, if something happened to him, like in a plane crash, I mean, hey, I mean, that stuff happens.
Okay, no, we can't go that far. We can't go that far. I can't go that far.
But, God, well, hopefully nothing happens. I just hope he loses the desire
Perfect
to
Perfect Weekly just threatened to assassinate Michael Gambon. Okay, I see that on my list.
No.
He's the wrong actor for the role, but he's just an actor. That's
I'm sure he's a very nice man, and he donates to the Boy Scouts.
To me, he's Deathly Hallows Dumbledore, so I don't know if I have an issue with him anymore. I really feel that way. Like, maybe he knew all along what his... I know he never read anything, but maybe Joe told him, you know, you're really bad.
I don't think that happened, Jen.
You really karate kick people. I mean,
here's the thing. I think we're used to Richard Harris, Grandpa Dumbledore. You know, he sits you on his knee and he gives you, you know, lemon drops, and he's a nice guy. And then in the last movie, you're left to wonder, was he an ass the whole time? With Michael Gambon, you know, he was an ass the whole time. You don't need to be talked into it. So,
can I tell y'all my one disappointment with the book that we don't find out?
Just one.
Yes, that it just popped into my head. Okay. That we don't find out if Harry gets his name on a chocolate frog card.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
He does?
She
did I miss it?
She says that in the chat, and Ron says it was the best moment of his life or something. Whatever Dumbledore said about it, is Ron has that same quote.
Oh, was that Ron?
It happened in the book?
No, it was Joe tells about it.
I was
after.
Like, I missed it? What?
No, was that actually Ron getting his... Or was that Harry?
In the chat, Harry and Ron, they all, I'm assuming all three of them get their chocolate frog cards, and Ron's quote about it was remember Dumbledore said something about that was his most, his favorite, not his favorite, his, I can't remember exactly what the quote was.
Moment. Or
proudest
whatever.
Moment.
Oh,
whatever.
Well, that's
Ron
so
says
good.
The same thing. Yeah.
And the Chadley Cannons never win, ever.
I loved that about the first yeah. book. I really did.
After the end, rest in peace.
You know, just one last note on Gambin. Considering he doesn't read the books, has anyone told him he dies in the next one?
I was wondering that, and I said this in the last podcast. My reading the sixth book, you know, I come to the scene where Gambin goes, you know, I'm sorry, I have to say Gambin, I can't say Dumbledore. When Gambin goes flying over the astronomy tower, and I closed the book, and I kind of breathed a little bit, and I said, okay, good news, at least he won't be in the last movie. No. Dumbledore, and unfortunately, Dumbledore is in every scene of the movie, so I'm sure Gambin will be yeah. back. I mean,
yeah. I just wonder. I really wonder if knowing what happens in Deathly Hallows now will influence the sixth movie and what's written in it. I mean, even more so
well,
than
the
others were.
They've already written, so I don't know
really
how much.
And
it
it's
can,
by that terrible guy that did Goblet.
Yes, it's that,
actually.
I'm so scared.
One of the things that I had a discussion with briefly in our interviews for the Order of the Phoenix premiere over at spell-cast.com, shameless plug, we kind of got David Heyman to kind of allude to the fact that the script hasn't been finished. They haven't wrapped up the script, mainly because they wanted to see Deathly Hallows come out first and make modifications to it based off that.
Yes.
That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, that is a good thing. So I was very excited to hear that. So yeah, I'm guessing by now it's done if they're waiting for Deathly Hallows to come out. But at
so
the
maybe
time,
they'll put Ginny in the movie this time.
Perhaps
that'd be great.
That might
be nice.
Well, Ginny wasn't really in the last book, was she?
Not really.
Not a lot.
Not a lot, but probably more than her two one-liners on the screen.
Something happened to the fat lady.
Her role has definitely been, even if she wasn't
diminished
right in the middle of it all. Yeah, but her role is, if they haven't finished the script, what happens in the sixth book is more important to keep in there and keep it right.
Yeah, because now we know some of the scenes were very important. They even paid off Spew a little bit. I mean, like, everything kind of had... Like, okay, let me ask you a question. When they were doing Spew all during Book 5, you know, I got the sense it was laying the seeds for some very, you know, earth-shattering, you know, moment in the last, you know, book where, you know, all hope is lost and suddenly the house elves with a big Hermione banner charge over the hill and save the day. It was basically just set up Ron and Hermione kissing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has even admitted that she let Hermione get very carried away with Spew. It just kind of happened, and then when she's asked if there's things that should have been edited out of Order of the Phoenix, Spew is always what she goes back to.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me because it was so much that was just Hermione, and I felt that how much she went with Spew really was sort of like how much she went with Harry learning occlumency. I mean, she just kind of gets stuck on things, and I think it's just part of her personality, so it never bothered me when I was reading it, I don't think.
Was that mentioned in Deathly Hallows? I can't recall. Did occlumency get mentioned by
Hermione?
Yes,
you've got to block him out of your mind. You've got to block him out of your mind every two
like,
seconds.
That's the only thing she
no
said.
No shit, Hermione. Thanks for coming by.
Well, yeah, that was... Oh, well, you were being sarcastic. I was like, what?
Pushing her what you should do, but she doesn't really come up with all that many suggestions on how to do it.
Okay, I gotta just ask this, because I just had this, like, 17 degrees of separation thing in my head, so I came back to actually what our topic was for tonight. Believe it or not, it's the first time that's ever happened. Okay, Melinda, now, I've been reading your stuff for a while, and there were so many scenes that you wrote in either Power of Emotion or Curse of the Damned or Seventh Horcrux that really resonated in Deathly Hallows. Now, you get the book in your hand and you're reading it for the first time. Like, how was, you know, just being involved in fan fiction and being an author, how did that, do you think, impacted reading the book for you?
I don't know if it actually... It was... Getting the book was just different than... It was so exciting. It was... This is the real thing, you know? This is the real thing. But then when a few things started, it was like... At first it was like, ooh, I did that. Ooh, I did... You know, you get excited. But then when some of the bigger things started really playing out, like when that pork started keep coming back and coming back, it's almost like, oh no, did it really happen? Did it really happen? And he wanted to almost go ahead and peek, but I didn't. But it was just exciting. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, like, there were so many things that jumped out at me. Like, even, like, you know, Harry... I'm sorry. Oh, God, I almost just became a Harmonian there. Sorry. Ron and Hermione...
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I know, but I just don't happen to be one.
Okay.
But I have great
respect... I'm not criticizing.
I have great respect for Harmonians. Some of my best friends are Harmonians. Actually,
do you realize that this is the first time I've ever heard that term?
Harmonian?
I didn't know that was the term.
Well, we have two Harmonians in this podcast. We have, like, we're one-third Harmonian right now.
Well, I'm a Harmonian. How do you spell that?
I'm definitely not a Harmonian.
I've never heard that
either.
Melinda's like, I just need to go out here on a limb. I am not a Harmonian.
Say that right now.
Well, what's that Harry Ginny called? Her Ginniumman?
Something.
No,
boring.
Mister.
What? I'm just E. All of the above. I've never heard that term before. Okay, sorry.
I just want to say one thing, and I will not bring it up anymore. I feel that the one big Happy Weasley family thing is incredibly boring. I mean, I know he never had a family, and he gets a big one. That was just... That's too pretty of a package for me, in my opinion.
That's exactly...
So you hated the epilogue, too?
The Epilogue of Doom, I think, as somebody else said tonight.
Yes! The Epilogue of Doom.
Who came up with Epilogue of Doom? I just have
it's
to ask.
It's fabulous.
Who came up with that?
Richard's my new best friend.
Today. I don't know who came up with it. Okay. I just said it.
Well, it's sticking. So, congratulations. Okay, Harmonian. What the hell was I talking about? I was talking about Harmonians. I was talking about Harry and Hermione and... No, I mean, the one thing that was jumping out at me was... No, I said that as a goof. That's why I said that. You know, like, you have a part in Power of Emotion that has, you know, Ron and Hermione essentially kissing for the first time based on Ron saying something very... I think it's... Doesn't he read Hogwarts of History or something like that? Yeah.
I mean,
you've had very similar moments to that. And you got dialogue right. You got... I guess this is the question I just want to kind of move the conversation towards. How has reading, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of fics affected, you know, when you actually get the real thing? Like, because I've heard so many people say, oh, it seemed like fan fiction. And I can't tell. Does that mean that we think she writes like us, or do we write like her? Or is
it just... she's just another person. She's not like this god of... I mean, I would say there are definitely some fan fiction writers who write just as well as she does, if not better. I mean, but we have to give her the credit because she's the one that came up with the idea that we all get to play around in.
Well, I think the fact that fanfic writers got stuff, too, is because she laid it all out pretty well for us to see where she was going. And then she allows us to do it. There's plenty of authors that don't let anyone, you know, write in their own little world. So she lets us. So, yeah, some of us are going to stumble onto things here and there that are the way it was going to go. But it was...
She says so humbly.
If it were me, I'd probably have the biggest head in the world. I can't believe she's on the ground right now.
And it's just so especially funny, Melinda, because yours was the one that was supposed to be the Deathly Hallows book. And do you know what I mean? Like, now I see it, and it's so much more funny to me now that because there are so sim- it's ridiculous.
It's cool.
Don't you wonder, Melinda?
It's
awesome.
Cool.
You should get money.
Melinda, don't you just wonder if, like, now that all the buzz is over and everything, if she'll, like, say, you know, I wonder what this, you know, seventh Horcrux was all about, and reads your fic? Like,
and
do you have, like, dreams about it?
Dear Melinda, very sorry. Off to spend my billions. Love, Jeff.
I'll use some wet naps so that you can try. It's just too funny.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Melinda.
No, I was going to say, if she ever did read it, that I think that would be the coolest thing ever.
Especially if she paid you money.
I don't think she's going to write Melinda a check as much as we want her to.
No.
I know. I would desperately want it.
The money?
I will just keep wishing for it for you. How's that?
Oh my god, I'd rather just have a letter from her.
The difference between Melinda and Jen.
All right, okay,
Melinda's
Melinda,
like, I just want to shake her hand. Jen's like, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R.
Yeah, I need one more zero, please. Yeah, okay.
Oh my god.
I'll write her a letter on your behalf, and I will recommend the story, and I will be like, you need to read this fic, and perhaps have a lawyer try as well.
The U.S. The U.S. Secret Service shows up at Melinda's house. Ma'am, can you come with us, please? And she's like, Jen!
I'll be like, love, Jen. So if that happens, you'll know it was me. And then you can write me a check for half, okay?
All right, so far we've threatened to assassinate Gambin and extort Joe Rowling, who we all love very much. And we've been doing this for like, what, an hour and 5 minutes?
We're all going to jail.
So I really think there's going to be a huge lot of Marauder fix. Like, I'm so excited about the Marauders coming to life again.
Now, why do you think
I would love that, Jen. I love Marauder fix. When they're done.
Have you read Shoebox?
Not yet. No. Because I shy away from the slash thing.
It's not very slashy. As far as slash goes, if you read the first chapter, you'll understand what I mean by not very slashy at all.
Is it more like at the end kind of ish?
It's more in
really don't know,
well,
but
it's a little bit more than after the end. Yeah, it's a little bit more than after the end, but it is not like smut by any means.
Well, if we read it for the podcast, I will read it.
Okay.
So. Yeah,
all right.
We'll be
well,
reading
I know
it on the
that
podcast,
if
yeah.
you even just try the fake, like the slash doesn't even come into like the 20th chapter or something. At least there is no slash at the beginning. Because I read it when I wasn't a slash fan, and I didn't know that it was slash. And then it got it, and it was the first fic that it didn't bother me that it was slash by the time it was slash. Does that make okay? Well, anyway,
yeah, it does. It makes sense.
I just have to stop and tell a side story really fast. Jen sent me an email one day, and
why
I
is this always my bad thing?
And I have it saved somewhere. And it said, Ryan, I have found the perfect fic.
Oh no.
This is awful, guys. Hold on, guys. I need to actually read you this letter because this is just this is so beautiful.
I apologize.
Let me see if I can find this here. Hang on.
Well, at least
don't you just wonder where he saves all this stuff?
I know. Well, this is kind of
Ryan with a tickler file over there going, "Okay, Jen."
Well, this is a good sample of the type of reviews that I write when I'm so extremely enthused about a story that I haven't finished.
All right. First, guys, give me 1 second because I have to find – I have the before and now I just need to find – oh, I don't know if I have the after. Okay. I was recommended a story today. I started reading it this morning. I feel as if I've been moved to tears by the sheer beauty and thickness and profoundness of it. It's amazing. It's very character-based. The plot is one that jumps around from scene to scene, but when I finish a scene, almost every single scene, I feel as though I've learned a moment and that there is an end. Perhaps there was more to it as I read. I'm filled with absolute anxiety, and yet I have such a calmness. All of the characters are in such pain, and yet they are strong. And at the same time, it never really describes feelings, but they come across so strongly by actions. Truly, Ryan, I have never read anything like this before. And I can honestly say I would never recommend this story to someone who isn't intellectually mature enough to understand it. It's told in Draco Malfoy's point of view, sort of. And it starts with him making the decision, whilst still in school, to become a spy for the light. And no one is told.
Do you have to use this tone of voice?
And it is kept secret, and somehow Harry understands. To me, the story is not something I would ever consider to be derived completely from canon. Derives is in parentheses. But it is much a story on its own as any I've ever come across. I think the only story I've ever read that had this type of impact was Shoebox. You read a scene and then stop and think and for every moment to try and sort out your feelings because you can't quite put a name to what you're feeling.
Oh my god.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm skipping a few paragraphs. And here's the kicker. I'm only on chapter 4. I've been reading all day, and I'm only on chapter 4, and I'm already blown away by it, and yet you can't tell what's happening or what's going to happen. The characters are still feeling out who they are, and I'm curious what you would think of a fic like this. I realize you're bombarded with many things, but this story has already told me that it's something special. I've been truly touched, and I can't tell you why.
Sorry. Oh, my God.
All right, I have to... Okay, now...
My cheeks hurt.
I wish... Now, I'm jumping, like, 8 or 9 paragraphs down.
You're making me sound like the world's biggest ass.
I'm jumping 8 or 9... I'm jumping down 8 or 9 paragraphs. All right. This fic also has Harry and Draco being homosexuals. But we haven't really seen anything. They aren't gay together, apparently. I don't see what their being gay has to really do with it. I in no way consider it to be a ship story. I'm not even sure I'd call it a story like that, but simply put, it's amazing. Anyway, I'm sitting here being blown away by it. I'm trying not to be burst into tears. And I have to get back to reading. So she sends me this novel.
Wow.
And like an hour and a half goes by, and she sends me another message.
No, tell him. I posted that, like, for the forum.
She posted
like,
it on the
everyone
forum.
Everyone to see.
Everyone to see. And then an hour later, hour and a half later, I get a message. You need to delete that post! It's absolute porn! They're having sex all over the place! They won't stop! I don't know why! It was such a beautiful story! You need to take it down! I'm humiliated! Children could read this!
I was so worried because, honest to God, I had no idea that it was going there. Like, it wasn't labeled anywhere as such. I was like, take it down.
So it was just I don't even know why I just started telling that story. I'm sure I had a reason.
Wasn't it a good review though?
It was a beautiful review of hardcore porn.
No, it was porn.
See, as soon as you said it was told from Draco Malfoy's point of view, and
it's porn.
Yeah, that this is immediately. I'm like, oh, here's a porn story.
Really? I didn't know. Honestly, well, not every story in Draco's point of view is porn.
What?
Nah, pretty darn close.
All right, so we got like a little bit of time left. What's everyone else want to talk about? Because it seems like we're going through this. Does anyone want to weigh in more on this? Does anyone have anything else they want to do, or should we wrap? I mean,
I have one thing actually. Okay. I think we might have hit on it already, though.
Go for it.
The first time I went through DH, I had a serious. You know, I was just like, this is totally fan fiction to me. And now, you know, I've read almost constantly since I, you know, I know she likes hear. Oh, I don't know how. Well, anyway, let me get to the point. I've been reading it for a while.
We're about to comment on Melinda again, right?
Yeah, I was going to, because that was the first one I read. I started it, I think it was on like chapter 2019 or something for the 7th Horcrux. And I haven't read it since the end, but when I was going through the first time, I was like, you know, I've read this before. This is fan fiction completely. But I went through the second time, and it was, I don't know, easier for me to accept as, you know, being the end and being actual canon for me. So I don't know if anybody else had that problem.
I think I felt very badly for Melinda reading this, and I'm just going to keep bringing this around to Melinda, because when I read fan fiction, you know, I'm always like, oh, that couldn't possibly happen, and this couldn't possibly happen, and this would never happen in canon, blah, blah, blah,
blah. And then it did.
Well, no, then I'm reading the canon, and I'm like, well, that could never happen in canon. Well, as I'm reading the freaking book, like, I'm like, well, that would never happen. Like, I don't know. I wonder if maybe
I just... sorry, I was thinking the same thing, though.
Well, Jen made a comment earlier about the JKR is just a person, she said, and I was thinking about that, and I think a lot of what was in there might have just been her, you know, especially at the end, wanting to, you know, this was her story all along, and there's been so many wild theories all throughout the fandom. I think she might have just wanted, at the end, to say, no, this is the way it was. I think that some of that might have come out there.
You have to wonder, too, if everyone has JKR built up in their minds as this, you know, masterful storyteller to such an extent that she would never do things, you know, in the way that, you know, yourself or Jen or I, you know, or Richard or Tina or Robert could, you know. You have to like how I just realized everyone who was on the podcast just there. I can do the intros anytime I want. You just have to love the fact that, you know, we never consider that she might write like we write. So when you see a story that ends with, you know, Harry and Ginny getting married and having three kids, you're like, mm-hmm. okay, what's the twist? Or, you know,
it seems so ordinary.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if a lot of people read, you know, the epilogue and were like, okay, so they get married and they have kids and their kids go to school and their kids go through puberty and they're nervous about, okay, this seems like my life. So, you know, and Harry Potter is much more interesting than me. He's not as interesting as Jen, but he's much more interesting than me. And
well, I think the part that bugged me was Ron learning to drive, because the whole thing.
What? That was the part that threw you, that Ron learned how to drive a car?
Yeah, actually, yeah, because to me, what Harry Potter did was give us an escape from what we all know, and it was kind of like this magical world that nobody knew about. And, like, I didn't necessarily like how she tried to, like, mix them. Because to me, Harry Potter was a fantasy, an escape from, and I felt like Ron learning to drive kind of defeated the purpose of this world outside of the world that we all know. And so I didn't like that.
But Hermione's a muggle, and Ron, like anything she ever said was about muggles, Ron knew absolutely nothing about them. I kind of liked it that he's, you know, she's completely come into her world, so now he's going into hers a bit. I liked that.
But even though Ron learned such a muggle thing as driving, doesn't he say something like, oh, well, yeah, well, I really didn't do that. I did a charm. You know, so... You know, I liked that because obviously I took it as, well, he's doing it for Hermione. He's learning to drive a muggle car. But, you know, he's really, you know, like he did through 7 years of school or 6 years of school, you know, he's just going to do enough to get by. And then he's going to, you know, do the rest with magic.
I have.
You know, it was a throwback also to his dad who charmed the car. He got to fly, you know, tinkering with the cars is kind of fun.
I've got the end of the 7th movie. Harry hugs little Albus Severus, whatever the hell his name is, goodbye, and gets on the train, and they all walk outside, and they climb into Ron's car, and, you know, you have Hedwig's theme in the background, and Ron drives directly into a telephone pole. And that's it.
I'd be like, screw you, Joe! Yeah, I would have lost it. If that had been, I would have, like, dropped off the planet at that point.
Why are you yelling at Joe for that?
if that had been the end.
No, they're talking about the movie.
The movie, Jen.
Oh.
You're like, well, Jake in the forum going off at Joe for, you know, Cho Chang.
No more going off on Joe. Let's not do
this
that.
It's going to end as a sing-along to The Wicked Witch is Dead. Like, seriously. And they're going to go down the yellow brick road and somehow make it really happy.
Well, the end of the book actually is. It's all of the portraits clapping for Harry and... Well, here's the thing. I can't see them ending the story with the epilogue, with the movie with the epilogue. I really think that they're going to end it...
I hope they don't.
I don't see how they can, really, because I think they're going to want to end it with the actors that we've known. I don't think they're going to want to end it with, you know, 37-year-old
Harry. 45-year-old dad.
Yeah.
He's supposed to 20.
I think they're really going to end it in Dumbledore's office with all of the portraits clapping. And it's actually going to remind me a lot probably of the ending of book 2 when everyone's inexplicably clapping for Hagrid. I mean... he's back! Yay! For 20 minutes. No one knows why, but it's like...
I think that would be a really good ending. Like, that would be awesome. And they could show, like, Dumbledore's portrait
they
clapping.
Could do something
and, like, him
even
karate
clapping. With the newspapers, like they did at the end of this last one, you know, Harry Potter marries Ginny Weasley, you know, they could still end it.
Yeah, like that montage they did in this new movie.
Yeah, I like that. I can't imagine them even trying to age the kids. I think that would be bad. You know, with their little younglets.
Oh, can I just tell you something terrible? I went to New York last weekend, and I'm on a very crowded subway car trying to get into Brooklyn, and this girl, she must have been like 18 years old, gets on the subway car, and she's right next to me. And literally, she has the bushiest hair I've ever seen in my life, and it was very humid. Like enormous hair. It's like I can't breathe. Her hair is in my face. Like, everyone's crowded together, and I came so close to telling her, "You are what Hermione should look like in the movies," but I was afraid she would assault me, so I didn't say.
Oh, I like Emma.
She doesn't look.
I think she's gorgeous.
No, she is, but that's not, Hermione's not. Okay,
she's
we're not
Hermione.
We're not going down that road again. And yeah. I didn't get beat up on the subway car, so for that I am grateful. Oh, by the way, Melinda, I forgot to tell you this 2 weeks ago, and I just thought of it. I made a joke reading the seventh Horcrux that wouldn't it be funny if they took Dumbledore's portrait and put it in the backpack and took it with them? But that would never happen.
Yes, Ryan. There were a couple things you guys said that would never happen. That you guess what? They did happen.
Yeah.
I wonder if Ron and Hermione could fit in the backpack and escape for a while.
I love that little bag of Hermione's. I thought that was the coolest little invention.
I have a question, Jen. Are you insinuating that Ron and Hermione, you know, had some quiet time in Hermione's purse?
I'm just saying it would be possible and somewhat kinky.
All right,
I'm
going to bring our podcast full circle. Fan fiction will be fine as long as Jen is available to provide plot bunnies.
Yeah, but I think it's only going to be the restricted sections.
All right.
I swear, wow. I don't just read smut. This podcast has given me like the worst kind of opinion. Like, people are going to go, "Oh, there's Jen," and like give me the waggly eyebrows like they know something.
Jen, they already knew. They already knew.
Oh.
But I just have to say something. Like, even like, and I'm, you know, for those of you who haven't joined the Parfic Weekly Forum, you know, join the Parfic Weekly Forum because we all have common rooms. And in the Hufflepuff common room, we're kind of doing a we're kind of writing, you know, post Deathly Hallows through a series of letters back and forth between all of the characters.
And oh, God.
And it's possible we've insinuated that something happened when Ron and Hermione went down to the Chamber of Secrets as well. You know, it shouldn't have taken them that long to get, you know, the battle. Like, on their way in the middle of... Was that you? Like, in the middle of the battle, they're going to stop.
That was you.
That was me, right?
Like, I don't know. Here's a good question, because, you know, I think the conversation was a lot more, you know, there was a lot of agreement in the conversation where I thought there'd be disagreement, but who thinks we're all going to turn into Jen in 5 years?
Oh, God, I hope
Are y'all
not.
Raising your hands? Or
in what way?
That we're all, oh, by the way, guys, I just have to chime in here. Melinda won the Wise and Gamut early voting based on the fact that she accidentally voted for herself.
No,
I didn't really win it, and it wasn't by one vote. Please don't say that, Ryan. It was supposed to be Bettina.
Well, here's the funny thing. We have Jules with 2 votes, Lilith with 2 votes, Melinda with 3 votes, and Tina with 1 vote. So, basically, you're telling me everyone voted evenly 25%.
It wasn't me.
No, I'm like looking at this, like that just astounds me. Like,
where are these votes?
Well, we are Hufflepuffs.
We're gonna have to flip a coin. Okay, I'm just very amused by the fact that the Hufflepuffs are equally deadlocked because they love each other so much they can't make a command decision.
Did you see the Gryffindors?
Where are
though?
These votes?
No, it's every common room has one. Mac is supposed to come up with one for you. No, why? What happened with the Gryffindors?
Like, we all unanimously selected the same 2 people.
Oh, really?
So, I mean,
really?
there was not even a need for a vote.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're all singing Kumbaya over here in the Hufflepuff common room. And I think it's going to go to Melinda.
Are we supposed to vote for something?
Okay, you would have been helpful an hour ago. we were having a vote to do, like, we're doing like the Wise and Gamut, and every house gets 2 people and they vote for what fix we cover next and stuff, and we had the vote and Melinda accidentally voted for herself and she accidentally won.
Oh, closed.
No, we're gonna have to reopen it again because I actually said you have to get 50% of the vote, so I'm not sure how we're gonna do that one, but
I'm gonna vote for myself.
really go for it because everyone else is voting for. Okay, sorry to get us off track there. Yeah, like here's a question. Like, I get the sense that a lot of, from what we're saying here, a lot of the discussion and a lot of the future effects are going to turn towards, you know, basically filling in the. Joe left us so much room to play with, like the missing 19 years. Especially the hereafter post epilogue. There's a lot of room for. So it sounds like people can be agreed.
A lot of room with Harry becoming an Auror too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. Do you expect, like, yes or no, everyone? Like, we'll go down the list. Would you expect to see a lot less, you know, 5th-year fix, 6th-year fix, 7th-year fix? Do you see that where people are just basically going to build off the canon and not go into AU territory as much?
Can I try real quick?
Yeah.
I just think that if people – I honestly think that there is going to be a 50-50, just like Melinda said. Well, I don't know if you meant exactly 50-50, but there are going to be two categories. And I think they're going to be the people who fill in the blanks from here, from book five on to the end. And I think they're going to be people who go on AU. And I think the ones who do AU are going to be, they're going to probably start before five or after five. Because I think it takes 1 through 3 or 1 through 4 to establish the characters. And I think the really good AU fix are the ones that establish kind of who's going on and then go off. And they may, like, just not do the Horcrux storyline and change it there. But I think there's going to be a big, a really big burst of fan fiction in that category where they're just going to change, like, it's going to be a whole different story, but starting at the fifth. I can't see anybody doing very many first through third year fix. I think there's going to be a lot of before the first year, but not necessarily 1 through 3 or 1 through 4 years.
Yeah, I guess that's my question. Do people write stories within Hogwarts based on the fact that we didn't know how it was in the end and they wanted to close it, or do people write stories in those years because they thought it was a fertile ground to do their own thing? I guess that's just what I'm trying to get a sense of. Sorry, Melinda, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that there's going to be a lot of Snape fix of what happened with Snape and Lily. I think a lot of people will explore that.
That makes Jen so happy.
No kidding. No, do we think people are going to go in Jen's direction and try and get the strangest romances out?
That's not true. I like the canon ones too.
I know.
Yeah, see, I think that when she started writing this, I think she had it in her mind that it was going to be Ron, Hermione, Harry, Ginny. And she wrote her way through. And I think, and I know this is how I feel, if I had been lucky enough to start it, you know, from the beginning, mm-hmm. that it would frustrate her, all the other ships out there and all the pairings, that's where the epilogue came from, was her saying, no, this is how it's going to be, and she made it that far in the future to say, this is how it's going to be.
I was actually curious. Well, you know what? I'm even just thinking this now, especially for people like, you know, Robin and Richard. You have, you know, year 7 end, and then you jump ahead to year, like, what is it, like year 26, and you know that Harry ends up with Ginny and Ron ends up with Hermione. There's even room in there to have, you know, for some reason, Harry go with Hermione for a couple of years and have that end and have it all work out in the end. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is she really surprised me. I mean, I was expecting, you know, when she came out and said that people are going to hate this book, I was expecting, like, rioting in the streets, you know, the fandom up in arms trying to, you know, put things back together again. She left a lot for everybody. Like, no matter where you come from, there's something in this book that you can really like, or she left so many threads open that you can really, whether you're a Harry Hermione shipper, whether you're canon, or whether you're into Marauders, it just seemed like she left so much for everybody behind. That, I don't know, maybe it'll be a lot, maybe we won't even know this, you know, the passing, in, you know, in the fanfiction fandom, and maybe it will just be.
I don't know. The way I see, I mean, there's two ways to look at it from being, you know, an author's perspective and a reader's perspective. Like me, I love to read AU stuff. Like, I still read, you know, post Order of the Phoenix, post Half-Blood Prince and all that. But on me personally, when I'm writing, I don't like to write against canon. I know that's kind of backwards, but I mean, I don't know how many other authors feel that way. But if there's any kind of similar opinion, then there's going to be obviously some kind of downward turn as to how many of those we get still. So I don't know. I'm hoping that there's still a good portion of AUs coming up, but, you know, let's see what happens.
All right, here's the last question I have for, because it seems like we're tapering out on this. Here's my last question for everybody. Where does the fandom go? Harry Potter, the canon is over. We're going to get an encyclopedia someday. You know, against what Jen thought, I don't think we're going to get a series of children's novels. I mean, this is it. So this is where we are. And we've had, you know, for those of us who have been here for a few years, we've had, you know, Pottercast, we've had Mugglecast, we've had the movies, we've had the books, we've had the release parties, we've had the speculation. Now that's over. Like, like whether it be like where you see yourselves or where you see, you know, the people in on this podcast, like where do you see everything in like 5 years, 10 years? Like, do you see it gradually tapering off? Do you see it as something that will be strong with a very vocal group of people? Like, what do you anticipate happening? Melinda, do you want to take it?
I think the fandom is as big as it's going to get at the moment. I do think that there's going to be some tapering off, but I don't think it's ever going to go anywhere. I mean, if you look at Star Wars even, there's still people writing from the original first three stuff from that. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think there's still going to be people playing in the fandom.
Will you be there?
Especially with the movies coming out, too, to keep the interest up. Yeah, I'm not planning on going anywhere.
Well, I knew you were writing your own thing. I got a little nervous. I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I'm planning on reading. I'm not saying I'm writing anymore, but I'm reading.
You're writing a post Deathly Hallows.
Your idea was great.
I'd read it. And Jen threatens and extorts people, so you better do what she says.
Oh.
Jen's like, I'm the bouncer. When did that happen? Jen, what about you? You think you're on your way out? Do you think the fan, like, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. Bye.
Later.
No.
Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. You think you're done yet? Just kidding.
Oh.
We love you, Jen. Don't go.
You better. Good God. Jen, I take a lot off y'all. What do I think? I actually extremely agree with what Melinda just said. I think that, I can't see there being a boom. I am so mixed, honestly, because I do feel that people are going to miss it in a few more months, and that there is going to be even more people doing fan fiction than there is now. But I think that a lot of them are quitting as well. I think so. It might just make up for the lost, the new people. And so, but I do think that Joe has inspired lots more to write. So I think a lot of the people who are in the fandom, we have a lot of people in the fandom who lurk. And I have a feeling that the lurkers are going to come out of lurking. And so in that, I can see it booming quite a bit and a lot more stories coming on and et cetera. So
I think I see...
I'm here for the ride.
Yeah, I think I see, like, you know, 10, 15 years from now, like, this slew of new published authors all saying they were inspired by Joe Rowling.
Oh, absolutely.
I think, like... Yeah. Melinda, I see you being one of them. I really, you know, I really, I don't know, I get that sense that this is like not even our fandom, but this is like the birth of, you know, something else coming down the road. Rob, what do you think? You have a podcast. You still going to be doing this in 5 years? What do you think?
I don't know about 5 years.
You're like, oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'd be lying out my teeth if I said, yeah, we'll be here. I know that I'll be personally within fandom in 5 years. I mean, that'll be and 5 years isn't that long of an amount of time. But like, I mean, for example, over at Spellcast, we're getting ready to start our second season. So it's like, we're not going anywhere for a while, but I do think, like, in regards to a podcast, like, I was talking to a podcaster of a certain podcast, and I'm not going to say names because I don't know if they don't want this publicly known, but I do know that they're planning on calling it quits here pretty soon because of the fact they want it to, they don't want to overstay. Like, it's kind of like a sitcom. Like, you know those sitcoms that, like, they end when they're on the top of their game, it's great. And granted, you're disappointed and it's over, but then there's those sitcoms that just go on and on and on, and they just, the jokes aren't funny anymore. And it's just like, wow, this show needs to die. So I don't want to get to the point where it's like this spellcast needs to die because it's no longer interesting or it's no longer worth any of our times. Because when it stops being fun for the people who do it, I think is when we'll stop. In regards to fan fiction, I think fan fiction is going to really... This is where it's going to kick off. I think canon ends, fan fiction really truly begins. Because... Like, I was talking to a couple of people at one of the conferences earlier this year. And, like, I know people who were refusing to read fan fiction until canon closed. And then they said when canon closes, then they'll start reading fan fiction. Because people don't want to, like, I guess, muddy the canon experience. I don't know.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think that canon is dead. But that doesn't mean the Harry Potter fandom needs to end. There's a 2010 conference. I mean, so I don't think the fandom is planning on going anywhere.
Yeah.
Just kind of commenting on the whole podcasting thing. Do you guys see yourself podcasting in 5 years?
It depends if Jen keeps having interesting stories every week to get us going. Jen, what do you think?
I would like to say yes. I realistically can see us podcasting at least until the last movie's out. And from then, I don't know. I can't say that I honestly know where I'll be and what my interest will be in a few years. But I've been devoted for 6 or 7 years, and it's not dissipating yet. So...
I don't know. I can see Jen and I as, like, crotchety old people still doing this.
Well, you guys, yeah, for Spellcast and PFW, you guys, you do fan fiction. That's what you podcast about. So there's endless amounts of stories for you guys to continue it with. Whereas
right.
Some of the bigger, you know, MuggleNet and Potter... What? Potter...
Oh, my God. Now you're going the other way.
Sorry. But... with the movies coming out, that's something to talk about, but there isn't as much canon. Like, I don't know if you even noticed on Leaky the other day, like, the updates right before DH came out were so fast and furious, you couldn't even keep up with what was going on. And now, for days on end, the kind of same story stays there. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, it depends really where... for all you know, those guys might move to fan art and fan fiction. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with the whole fandom. It's interesting. I mean, you know, we have, you know, the tagline for Parfait Weekly. It's the place where the story never ends. I mean, I
think that's really true, because as long as, although canon is done, I mean, we said it 100 times tonight, there are so many directions for talented and creative authors to go, that as long as there continue to be fanfics of original quality and, you know, that are a good read, mm-hmm. I know I'll keep reading them. I'm not done with this yet. You know, personally, I'm not ready to be done with this universe. And
I think when someone writes a 19-part, year-long, per-part story that bridges, you know, the end of chapter 36 with the epilogue, then we can all go home.
Well, it doesn't. Every story doesn't have to be a full year anymore either. There can be, like I love that she made Harry the War, because I think that leaves so much open. There can be so many more adventure stories anyway, which is what I like. But so many more, just shorter. They don't have to take a whole year span. There can be the bad guys. You can have stuff blown up, but it can still be story, you know, about Harry, which is what I think most people don't want to let go of.
Who wants to see Hermione as a trial lawyer?
As a tribal warrior?
I love you, Jen.
Why? Is that what you said? Obviously not.
No, it wasn't what he said, but yes, I definitely want to read a fic about Hermione as a trial.
I don't... What did you say? It's kind of been scratchy on my end, so... trial lawyer. Oh.
Warrior works so much better.
That would have been could you imagine, like, Joe Rowling being interviewed the morning after? I mean, like, Harry and Ron become warriors, and Hermione becomes a tribal warrior, and the silence in the room, like, she almost had it, now we just hate the story. Oh, Jen. I'm so glad you're here. Jen? Jen, I'm so glad you're here. She's nowhere to be found.
She's gone.
She's yes, still laughing sorry. Over the...
No comment.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, I am, like, speechless. Well, is anyone... Before we
go from there?
I think Hermione is a tribal warrior, is about as far as... You know what it is? I think... Here's my thing. Like... I think I was expecting... I think my expectations were low, you know, and I think I was expecting, you know, canon to really not satisfy a lot of people and for there to be this huge backlash into the fandom where people finish the story themselves. I think she has left so much open. You can tell, you know, Hermione is a trial lawyer or is, you know, Jen sees it, you know, as a you know, woman who lives in the woods and you know, hunts her own food. You can do, you know, the detective story with Harry and Ron. I'm freaked to hell now that Harry's going to lose his wand and that'll be it. I mean, you know, there's thanks, Melinda.
No problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much that can happen here. I mean, I hate to say it, but I really don't think I gave Jo enough credit. I think she's done an amazing job. I think she's left an amazing gift for fan fiction. There's so much material that for people who really can't go beyond the canon, I think there's so much they can write. I think, I don't know, I get the sense she left Ted for two reasons. Number one was, you know, just to, you know, give that, you know, other bookend to Harry, like the other orphan without, you know, who was abandoned and...
But it'll be different this time.
Yeah, but yeah, it'll be different this time. And Jenny, you're right?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay, I thought you were giggling. Which
no.
Jen, you're giggling as you're saying you're not giggling. Jen, is there a secret you'd like to share with the class?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I just definitely think it's going to be fun. I can't wait to see what Melinda comes up with next. I mean, other people. I can't wait to see what other people come up with next. Melinda's off writing right now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No.
She's making notes. All these plot bunnies.
Oh, God.
The plot bunnies are there, yeah.
So I think I'm done for the night. Anyone else have anything they want to throw out there?
Nope. I'm spent.
Nope.
Jen, you're done?
I'm done. I think this is the shortest episode ever.
Hey, everybody. This is Mac with another Potter Fic Weekly mailbag. Headmaster Ryan has just handed me a large, large stack of voicemails and a single email and told me to go ahead and get started on those. So I'm going to start listening to them and make some comments and feedback.
Hey, Mac. This is Ryan and host the show, but I figured this was the easiest way to get into the mailbag. I just wanted to let our listeners know that you're volunteering and you just moved to Philadelphia. And on behalf of Potter Fic Weekly, we just want to wish you a lot of luck. We wanted to get you something to commemorate, you know, this major change in your life. And we couldn't think of anything. So we all just thought we'd call in and offer you our own special kind of praise. Bye.
All right, now I'm a little bit scared. If you guys are all going to offer me praise, that does explain the long list of voicemails, and I appreciate that. So let's see what everyone had to say.
Hi, this is Kate, and I just wanted to tell you all about my Potter Fic Weekly boyfriend, Mac. He is like, oh my gosh, so cool. I'm kind of grounded from the internet right now, so when I get back on the weekend, he is going to take me on some really fantastic, really romantic Potter Fic Weekly date, and he is just the nicest guy. When I was head girl, he was head boy, and we were like the first Potter Fic Weekly couple, and we are so cute. I have to say, we would be nominated as like the best, or we are nominated as the best Potter Fic Weekly ship on the forums because Mac, he's like Aww. So, hi, Mac. This is hugs and love from Kate.
Actually, thank you, Kate. I really appreciate that. Kate says that she thinks we're the best relationship on Potterfic Weekly, but actually, we are the best. No question, no other Potterfic Weekly couple comes close. Kate and I did manage to have our date this weekend. We went and saw the Weird Sisters, danced, got crazy, and then when that was done, we finished off the evening stargazing with a nice bottle of wine. It was a wonderful date that only a girl like Kate could provide. Our next voicemail is from Jen, and let's see what Jen has to say.
This is Jen from the forums, and I was looking at my mailbox today, and I just noticed that I had a letter, and it was just a plain white piece of paper, but it had written, "I am here, love, Harry." Like, where is he? Can you tell me, please, where Harry is? Like, it's not like I have a GPS system or, you know, I have, like, one of those satellite implants in him. Is he here? Is he there? Where on earth is he? Like, how am I supposed to find him? Please, will you tell me where he is, please?
Well, thanks for the message, Jen. I actually have no idea where Harry is, and let me say that if I did, I wouldn't be here in Philadelphia doing my volunteer program. I would actually be finding Harry, capturing him, pulling a sample of his DNA so I could make little mini Harrys, like Mini-Me, and selling them to all of the Harry Potter fans to have their very own mini Harry. I would, of course, have three because he would just be far too cute for words. Thanks for your thoughts, Jen.
Yeah, hi, this question is for Mac. Mac, I was wondering if you could tell me why it was exactly that Robert E. Lee, who was clearly a superior intellect and strategist, lost to Ulysses S. Grant, who was really no more than a common drunk. That's always confused me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Ah, Phil, a history question. Thank you so much for a history question. Well, I actually went to Transylvania University, which is located in Lexington, Kentucky, where Jefferson Davis was a student, a little trivia for you. So I happen to know a lot about the Civil War, more than I'd like to. One of the reasons that Robert E. Lee lost the Civil War, despite the fact that he was a brilliant military strategist, was because the South's lack of transportational lines, railroads, and roads made it very difficult for the Southern Army to move. Also, it's common knowledge that the Southern Army, the Confederacy, was extremely undermanned and undersupplied during the Civil War. Now, while the South might have been more passionate about what they're doing, it's hard to be passionate when not all your soldiers are wearing shoes and have to walk through feet and feet of snow in order to get to a battle, only to find a well-trained Northern army that has all their ammunition, uniforms, and anything that they needed. Now, even the best military strategist is going to face consequences when going up with an army like that. Thanks for your question, Phil.
This is Jen from the forums, and I was just wondering, if Jimmy cracks corn and nobody cares, why does he keep doing it? Why do we sing about it? I just don't understand. I really could use some help. Thanks, Zach.
Well, thank you for another interesting voicemail, Jen. Why does Jimmy crack corn if no one cares? Well, I think it's the same reason that she sells seashells by the seashore, and the woodchuck chucks wood. I don't know how much wood the woodchuck can chuck, but it does chuck wood. These things all just tend to happen. They're the way that the universe naturally balances itself. I can't explain it, I don't know why, but they certainly do tend to happen.
Hi, this is Shannon from the forums, and I was just wondering if Snape wears boxers or briefs?
Well, Shannon, thank you for your question. Does Snape wear boxers or brief? You know, I have to say that given the type of person Snape is, he likes to have a lot of control over the things he does. So I'm going to guess that he's a briefs kind of guy. Plus, he probably comes from not such a wealthy background, as we've recently found out. And he's a bit of a slime ball. And while some slime balls might wear boxers, poor slime balls tend to go with the briefs because they're cheaper and you can get them in bulk. I myself sometimes wear briefs, sometimes wear boxers. It really depends on the occasion. If you'd like to know more, email me at mac@potterficweekly.com.
Okay, they say practice makes perfect. But they also say nobody's perfect. So, why practice?
Well, Phil, that's a great question. when they say nobody's perfect, they're actually talking about me. You see, a lot of people think I'm nobody, but I'm perfect. Now, practice can get you as close to perfect as you can get, but honestly, no one's really going to get up there to where I am. Great question, Phil.
Hi, Mac. This is Jen again, and I was just rereading Deathly Hallows, and I was just realizing that Hedwig really dies, and I just wanted to know why Joe killed him. Why?
Ah, a terrible, terrible event that happened, Hedwig's death in Deathly Hallows. Honestly, I was very upset by this death, and I didn't even see it coming myself. I thought it was frivolous, pointless. Why the bird? I mean, the bird didn't do anything. Why kill off Hedwig? It seemed so meaningless. But the truth of the matter is, it had to happen. Harry had to slowly start losing some of the most important pieces of his life, and Hedwig was always the animal that was there for him when he was with the Dursleys, when he needed a friend during Chamber Secrets. Hedwig was just the it bird. But I'm sad to say that Hedwig was expendable, and it was either that or Ron Weasley, or God forbid, Ginny Weasley. And if I had to choose between a Weasley and the bird, I'll choose the bird.
Hi, Mac. This is Jen from the forums, and I was just wondering, if you watched the movie, if you watched the TV show Lost, it's actually one of my favorite TV shows, and I was just wondering if you could tell me why they're on the island and if they're ever going to get off the island or if the others are going to get them, or, you know, there's a theory I know that they're cloned on there. So I was just wondering if you could tell me what's really going on. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Jen, thanks for another great voicemail. The television series Lost is actually about my childhood and my childlike innocence. Those characters are personifications of my youth. All the different aspects. I know some of the characters are angry, some of them are sad, some of them are hopeful. But you'll notice that, for the most part, they're all good-looking. And that's very similar to my childhood. But like my childhood youth and innocence, it is lost. I don't know where it went, but I do have a feeling that one day I'll find it again. Probably about the time I'm on my deathbed and wishing why I spent so much time doing Potterfic weekly mailbags when I could be doing something productive on a Saturday evening, like partying in the big city of Philadelphia. I don't know why they're there, but I'm going to guess that it's really all a manipulative ploy by network executives to get you to watch television in order to indulge in the commercialization provided by advertisements. Really, you should read. Turn off your television. Go outside. Enjoy the world. Or pick up a copy of Harry Potter or one of the fanfics based on Harry Potter and expand your mind. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, hi. I have another question for Mac. I was wondering if you could quickly explain the concept of flight.
Thanks, Phil. As far as I understand it, flight comes from Bernoulli's principle, which basically says that when air is divided over the surface of a wing, it creates lift. I'm not entirely sure how this works, although I could ask a physics major that I happen to know quite well, and she could explain it better. But flight is either Bernoulli's principle put into practice or pixies. It could be lots and lots of pixies mashed up into liquid fuel and then fed into jet engines. Kind of like what Tinkerbell did with Peter Pan, but instead of that gold dust, it's actually crude oil. I think eventually this oil is going to be put on the market for our regular cars to use, and we will have flight in our Ford Explorers. How cool would that be? Thanks, Phil.
Okay, Mr. Mac, I have a simple question for you. What were the effects Webb Du Bois had on the integration of a post-Civil War America, and do you feel his methods were helpful or detrimental to the cause? Thanks.
Another Civil War question. Well, thank you very much, Lonely Riddle, for that. I have to admit that W.E.B. Du Bois, or Webb Du Bois, as he's known, is a little bit outside of my range. But I think the biggest effect that he had was lending his name to the Internet, or as we more commonly call it, the Web. You see, even though Al Gore didn't create the Internet until 100 years after the Civil War, its effects were originally taking place when America realized that in the post-Civil War era, they needed to connect, to become closer, to avoid from coming apart and falling apart another time. And that is why we came up with the Internet, to keep us from having another Civil War. And what do you know? A few years after the Internet came out, we had a European Union and peace in the Middle East. And before you know it, we'll have a globalized market and a globalized government and a globalized religion. And then the world will end. And, well, I don't want to spoil the rest for you, but read Revelations and you'll have a better understanding of what W.E.B. Du Bois was talking about. Thanks, Lonely Rill.
Dear Mac, what was the best thing before sliced bread?
Ah, the best thing before sliced bread. Nicole, that's an excellent question. I'm going to have to go with fire. Fire, definitely. Fire allowed cavemen to come out of their caves, to start exploring the world in ways that we've never been able to explore before, to provide ourselves heat in order to cook our meals, to give us weapons to forge metallurgy. Fire is what allowed us to move from Homo erectus to Homo sapien, and eventually allowed us to cook bread that we sliced and said, "Why, this is the best thing since sliced bread." But before sliced bread, there was fire. And before there was fire, there was dinosaurs. And they were cool, too. They were cool, too. That's better. But they weren't as cool as fire. They weren't cooler than sliced bread. I think it goes fire, sliced bread, Harry Potter, dinosaurs, dinosaurs and F-14 jet planes, and me. I'm also on that list of things that are as good as sliced bread. Thanks, Nicole.
Hi, this is James from the forums. I was just wondering, where exactly in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Ah, James, long time no hear. I'm really glad to get a message from you. Well, James, Carmen Sandiego is in fact locked in my basement. I heard that song over and over and over and over and over again. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? That's right. And eventually it just drove me crazy. So I went out on a manhunt, and it took me 5 long years, and I searched everywhere. Budapest, Bucharest, Tokyo, Washington, D.C. And finally, I came to New Zealand. But that was a bust. Well, I thought it was a bust. But I found a last clue. Letters from Headmaster Ryan to Carmen Sandiego. That's right. You want to know the real truth about Carmen Sandiego? She was having an affair with Headmaster Ryan. And she uses an alias of Danielle. That's right. Danielle is Carmen Sandiego. But now, she's locked in my basement. You know why? So I don't have to hear that song anymore. When people say, "Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?" I say, "She's in the basement, folks. I've got her. If you want to see her, I will bring her to you. Ryan comes over all the time and feed her, so I don't have to. That's where Carmen Sandiego is." Excellent question, James. Ah, another one from Phil. Let's see what this one says.
Is it Pirates of the Caribbean or Pirates of the Caribbean?
Ah, now that's a good question. Well, as many of our listeners might know, I actually went down to the sea a few weeks ago on a cruise. And while I was there, I was riding in a taxi cab, and I kept saying, "Caribbean, Caribbean." And the taxi driver, every time he would correct me, he'd say, "Caribbean, Caribbean, man. It's Caribbean." And I was like, "Caribbean?" And he goes, "Yes, Caribbean, not Caribbean, Caribbean." So to answer your question, it is, in fact, Pirates of the Caribbean. Thanks, Phil.
Hey, this is a question for Mac. I wanted to call and ask, which is best on a Twinkie Wiener sandwich? Ketchup, mustard, or peanut butter?
Which is best on a Twinkie Wiener sandwich? Ketchup, mustard, or peanut butter? There's a lot to be taken into consideration with this question because you're mixing separate food entities. A main course, like a Twinkie, or junk food, like a hot dog. When you do this, you have to understand the subtleties that can be created atop your taste buds, and you really have to be careful about what you're doing. Now, the pastry, the yellow, soft, tissuey outside of the Twinkie, is a lot like bread, so it would be okay with ketchup or mustard because you'd eat that with a hot dog anyways. But then you take into consideration the sugary white cream that lays inside the Twinkie. Now, something that sweet shouldn't go with a ketchup or a mustard. So you would naturally think peanut butter. But peanut butter does not go well with a hot dog. Not at all. So what you have to do very carefully is take a syringe needle, fill it with ketchup, and then inject the ketchup into the hot dog. Then take a separate syringe because you don't want to cross-contaminate these things. It's very, very important. Take a separate syringe. Fill it with peanut butter, which is going to be more difficult to inject. And slowly, slowly and carefully inject the peanut butter into the Twinkie. Now, you must be careful because unlike the hot dog, which can expand a little, the Twinkie will burst if you are not careful and you will have both cream and peanut butter on the hot dog. This is a mistake. You must be able to inject just the right amount of peanut butter so that you can still taste it mixed up with the cream, but not so much that you break open the Twinkie and cause cross-contamination between the food. Your taste buds will thank you, I promise. And we have one last call. Let's see.
This is Karen again. Not Danielle, Karen. Should I clarify? I'm calling in because I have a few things to say about the book Harry Potter and something Hollows, right? Or something. I don't know. Anyway, that part at the end, I don't know if you caught it, but where, like, Harry Potter's, like, riding on the giant monkey. That, I don't really get that part. Is there some sort of, like, philosophical meaning behind that? Did anybody catch that, or is that just me? I sometimes have a wild imagination with this stuff. I almost said a bad word. Anyway, so, yeah, there's that part. And I heard also that people who are supposed to die don't really die, like Harry Potter. I think it's his time to go. Bye-bye, Harry. I'm just kind of sick of hearing about him, you know what I'm saying? Harry Potter this, Harry Potter that, going to Barnes & Noble at 12 o'clock in the morning and going to buy me some Harry Potter and Halloween something, I don't know. So, yeah, that's it. That's all I got. Just wanted to get, you know, get people's opinion on that. And that's it. I'll call in at another time just to hear what you guys have to say. That's all I got. Have a great day. Bye.
Well, Karen, let me just say I am absolutely delighted that you took the time to send this voicemail and say what we've all really been wanting to say about Harry Potter from the very beginning. What is up with Harry Potter riding the monkey? The monkey! I think this is an attempt of J.K. Rowling to make an allusion to The Wizard of Oz. When you had the dancing flying monkeys, You see, J.K. Rowling realizes that Harry Potter is mostly perceived as a children's book, and she's done the best she can to throw in witchcraft and violence, murder, deaths, and even a little bit of romance to try and lure in the adult crowd. But it's just not working quite as well as she hoped. So what does she do? She brings in flying monkeys. Why? Because she wants to help adults reminisce to a period in their life when they felt joy, like the first time they watched Wizard of Oz and they saw those little monkeys popping around and you said, boy, those are cute monkeys. Well, she said, Flying monkeys worked then, and dang it, it might work now. Now, you're also right. We are all tired of hearing about Harry Potter this and Harry Potter that. It's his time. He was supposed to go. That way, like Carmen Sandiego, we wouldn't have to hear about him anymore. Well, there's a lot that can be said on this issue. Harry Potter is a bit overused in our society. And the worst part is, for us real fans, those of us who have stayed with Harry Potter from the very beginning, every time we mention it, or our obsession with fanfic, or our relationship to people who are bit by tarantulas, or have girlfriends in New York, or whatever our relation is to the host of Potterfic Weekly, when we talk about them, having never actually met them, our friends give us bemused looks that make us feel dumb, less of a person. And it's all Harry Potter's fault that we feel that way. I relate to what Draco Malfoy was feeling. I think that he should have had the right to blast Harry off the rampants with Dumbledore, ending the story once and for all. Voldemort takes over society, the book ends, and people would quit talking about him. But on the other side, think of how many people are reading because of Harry Potter. Well, Jen's not. She's still watching television shows when there's such great literature out there. But think of all the children who picked up Harry Potter and then picked up Phil Pullman's Dark Material series or Matilda by Roald Dahl. And they began to expand their minds, first by reading Harry Potter and then by diving deep into other forms of literature. And before we know it, they're reading Walt Whitman, Herman Melville, Charles Dickens, Shakespeare, the Bible. Where will it all end? I don't know, but I'm glad that it's not going to. Harry Potter is a gateway to encourage literature, education, and scholarship in the young minds of America's crumbling society. So, even though we have to hear about him over and over again, is it worth it? Is it worth it because our children are reading? That's an interesting philosophical question. Quite frankly, I don't know. I've still got dancing monkeys on the mind. Well, thanks, Karen. We also received one email this week from Garrett. Garrett says, Mac, I've been dying to ask someone this for ages. When is the most recent projections for the sales of Fiji Water on the global market? Should I buy stock in Fiji Water Incorporated? Also, if I were to go to Fiji, would I be able to find a Fiji Water vendor? Why or why not? Well, you know, I think I'm going to have to refer to the great philosopher Nietzsche, who said, I think, therefore I am. And I think what he meant to say is, Mac thinks, therefore Mac is right. So listen to me when I say this. The most recent projections for the sales of Fiji Water on the global market are actually not that good. Fiji is not very popular on the global market. It's more of an American brand. Now, while the American stock market might look like it's bountiful and plentiful right now, you're basically putting all of your money on faith. This is a mistake, Garrett. This is a mistake. Invest in gold! It worked for Jack Sparrow. Well, aside from the whole Aztec curse that cursed that entire ship. But gold is where it's at right now. Real gold. What you do is you go to Fort Knox. You take that money, you bribe the guards, and you steal as much of that gold as you possibly can. And then you bring it to me for safekeeping. And I promise I won't tell anyone where I got it, or how much I have, or even that you ever had. In fact, with any luck, after you give me the gold, people won't even know you ever existed. Now, if you were to go to Fiji, which might help me get rid of you, I mean, help you to explore your options, would you be able to find a Fiji water vendor? Yes. Yes, you would. They would sell you water, and it would be from Fiji. Now, would it be Fiji brand water? Well, I don't know. I suppose you'd have to ask them. Garrett, my recommendation to you is take the money you were going to invest in companies, bribe the guards, get me some gold, bring it to me, and then head out to Fiji. And I promise I will have someone waiting there for you to help you answer your questions. Well, folks, thanks for all the wonderful, welcoming voicemails that you've sent me. I feel very welcome and very loved. Only my Potterfic Weekly family could do that. So I'm going to close for this week and say please continue to send such excellent questions and have a great night.